Our food critics are in session today on Central Standard, and they're going to talk about fine dining in Kansas City. Let me introduce the critics now. Charles Ferruzza of The Pitch, good morning.
Good morning, Gina.
Charles joins us for every food show. Our other guests this morning are special visitors. Longtime listeners may remember Lou Jane Temple. She was a regular food critic on The Walt Bodine Show. She's a food writer, a personal chef, a former restaurateur, and a driving force for lots of arts institutions here in town. Please join me in welcoming Lou Jane Temple to Central Standard.
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And last but not least, Bon Juing Lee. He's a food writer and photographer based out of Kansas City. His blog is The Ulterior Epicure, and he joins us this morning from Napa Valley. Hi, Bon Juing.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Thanks for being here. Well, let's talk first of all about what we mean by fine dining. I personally use the term very loosely, having something to do with a combination of a star chef, a classy atmosphere, and frankly, a really steep price tag. But it occurs to me that maybe I should rethink that. So I want each of you to give me your definition of fine dining. And just to be clear, we do not have to come to a consensus. It's okay to disagree. Lou Jane, let's start with you.
I think it's amazing how that term has changed in let's say the last 20 years. It used to mean you had to have a tablecloth, you had to have fine crystal china. There were certain rules for fine dining, and that none of them really had to do with being a star chef, because we didn't have star chefs then, really.
It's a new concept.
It's evolved into something that I think the stiff price tag is still there. I think the classy atmosphere is still there. But if you think about the way that we eat today, it's very different than that. It's very much more relaxed, even in a expensive, classy setting. It's still more relaxed.
Yeah, the definition of classy has changed.
That's right. And young people don't want to put on a jacket to go to a restaurant.
Charles, what about you?
Well, I think today, and Lou Jane's right. I mean, I also grew up at a time where an expensive restaurant, a fancy restaurant, had certain rigid requirements, one of which is you wore a jacket, and the other was that it was going to be expensive. And I think this still pretty much holds true, that it has a fine dining restaurant always has a very, very nice wine list.
And
a good liquor list as well. You know, they aren't serving, you know, cheap booze.
What I think is interesting is that so far I'm not hearing that good food is a requirement for fine dining.
Oh, I think it very much is. But I think today fine dining is all about the details, really. And of course, the price point, I suppose. Lou Jane's right. The component of the great chef is really a new development in the last maybe 20 or 30 years. That was much less important for fine dining in the past. And I should say that maybe for our listeners, the ne plus ultra of fine dining in Kansas City for years and years and years was the Savoy Grill, because it had white tablecloths. It had very, I would say, pretty professional service, you know.
Tableside Caesar salad dressing.
Tableside anything. And if you remember, in the glory days, when Jasper's restaurant, which was then on 75th Street, was in its, it was a very, very fine dining restaurant. It's much more casual now in its new location. But you really had to wear a jacket, and the servers were all in tuxedos. It was maybe the last gasp of truly old school fine dining. But the details, I think, are there has to be some kind of elegant or decent bread service. There has to be a good wine list. Fine dining restaurants almost invariably have their own pastry chef, which is very unusual for most restaurants, and that the service has to be exquisite.
Bon Juing Lee, what do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with both what both of them have said about fine dining. I think they're hitting the nails on the head. Fine dining has really changed even within the past 10 years that I've sort of been in the food community. And there's this move to strip everything down even at the highest levels. You can go to 3 Michelin-starred restaurants that don't have tablecloth, necessarily. I'm currently here in Napa working with a 3 Michelin-starred kitchen. And in their dining room, they don't have tablecloth on half the tables. And also, interestingly enough, they don't have a pastry chef. I think there's a lot of some fine dining restaurants are moving towards collaborative of pastries, since there's this new trend of more of a savory pastry approach to things. But I think that they basically have covered all the bases. I mean, fine dining has really changed for the more casual. I think people in the younger generation don't really want to, you know, have to be in a suit and a tie going out and having to sit through a 3-hour meal. I don't think they want to, you know, have to be like, you know, constricted to that. And I can name very few restaurants in the United States, maybe even on one hand, that require a jacket and tie anymore. I mean, a public dining restaurant, not a private club, but in a public sense. So absolutely, I think it's become much more casual. I do think that for me, fine dining does require very good food, as Charles pointed out. And I think he's very right about the details. Service has become a huge component, I think, of differentiating fine dining from not fine dining.
What would be the distinction between service, Bon Juing, in just a good restaurant and a restaurant that would qualify as fine dining, in your estimation?
As Charles said, I think it really has to do with details. How much does the staff pay attention to the details? You know, and a fine dining restaurant, or what, you know, what sort of puts a restaurant over in the service category to fine dining is the level of attention that they give to the guests. It may not be attention in the sense that they're always on your table, but in the sense that they notice what you need, they anticipate every need. And there's sort of this grace and elegance to the way they interact, how they move on the floor. There's a sort of seamlessness that you may not notice service happening, but it just happens. Dishes appear, dishes disappear, glasses get refilled. You don't really notice it. They just sort of try to move in the background, and everything just sort of, you know, flows evenly. So I think it really has to do with details, the level of detail. And also, I think this is the other thing that for me is the amount of knowledge that the servers have about what they're serving. A lot of times you'll go to a restaurant that when you ask the servers about the food, they may not know. I think now, since there's a lot more knowledge about food, even among consumers, I think consumers are becoming a little more savvy about dining out. You know, at a fine dining restaurant, if you were to ask a server to explain this dish for you, oftentimes, you know, they're required to know every single thing in the dish. Also, that's due to an increase in dietary restrictions. They have to know, you know, is this dish going to contain something that might be, you know, might be an allergen, like nut oils or, you know, what have you. But I think the knowledge of the staff is really key, too.
Charles, what about staff?
I was just at a restaurant in another city where they had the affectation of being a fancy restaurant and the pretensions of being a fancy restaurant, but the service was terrible and beyond terrible, actually. And, you know, and that ruined the entire experience for me. I want to say that there aren't a lot of restaurants in Kansas City where the servers know the ingredient of every dish. But I will say that the first couple times I went to the Novel restaurant, which is definitely on my list, and forgive me, I don't know the address of it. It's on 17th and Summit.
Yeah, over on the west side.
Right. I was so impressed that the servers there knew every ingredient and how the dish was prepared. I mean, it really, really added a lot to the integrity of the meal.
So that is an interesting idea. When we talk about things like white tablecloths and crystal for the glasses and things like that, coat and tie, and then we make a distinction between the affectation of a fine dining restaurant and it really truly being a fine dining restaurant. When we have these sort of rules, how do you distinguish between the affectation and the real thing? Lou Jane?
Well, I think it has shifted, and that's, I think that's what I'm hearing from both of these guys. The idea used to be you had to come to them and obey their rules and go by their things. And now the service comes to you. It's not about this is the only way you can have it. It's about how can we make you happy? And I think that shift goes all the way to the kitchen. You know, it's much more of sharing what their recipes are.
Interesting. Well, we're off to a break, but when the food critics return, we'll be hearing their recommendations for the best fine dining in and around Kansas City. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a ring at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to hear where you go when you're willing to splurge for a special meal. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is a food show on Central Standard. The food critics with me this morning are Charles Ferruza, Lou Jane Temple, and Bonjuing Lee. We're talking about fine dining. Call 816-235-2888 with your recommendations or to share your personal criteria for what qualifies as a fine dining establishment. Is the definition changing, as we've been hearing, or are you holding strong to the old school ways? 816-235-2888. So, Charles, if you were going to name the fine dining establishments of Kansas City that are really worth the price tag that we've discussed, what would you mention? What would be the first thing on your list?
Oh, probably the American, Blue Stem, and Justice Drugstore come to mind. They're all very chef-driven. That's one of the changes, is that the chef is now the star of the restaurant, as opposed to the restaurant being the star.
So let's tease some of this out. Can we, as a group, just discuss those three restaurants? Let's discuss the American. Charles, start us off, and I want to get our other guests' input on this restaurant, too.
Well, the American, since it opened in, the 70s, I think it opened in 74, it's always been considered the ultimate fine dining restaurant in Kansas City. For one, it's very elegant. It has a very beautiful interior. It's always had very exquisite service, and they've always had celebrity chefs. I mean, are there three or four James Beard winners who have come out of the American, at least? And it's you know, it's not a restaurant, I think, that makes a lot of money, but it's certainly a treasure to Kansas City.
Bonjuing, what do you think of the American? What would be your insights about this restaurant?
Yeah, no, I agree. And Charles is right. It opened in 74. This is their 40th year open. I would say that a lot of the chefs who have come out of that kitchen, as Charles pointed out, are celebrity. But however, I would say that instead of celebrity chefs going there, I think the American restaurant really has been a launching pad for chefs because they have become well-known during or because of their cooking there.
Who are the chefs we're talking about?
Well, so there were Debbie Gold and Michael Smith, who were co-chefs there in the late 90s. They both won the James Beard Award. And then following them came Selena Teo, who also won the James Beard Award as a chef there. And as Charles pointed out, it is sort of, I would say, at the pinnacle of what we would consider traditional fine dining. There's, you know, there's tablecloth. It's an exquisite setting. It's got a beautiful view. And the service has always been of a certain caliber.
Do they do that thing where they come by with the tool that moves the breadcrumbs off of your tablecloth? I think that is
the crummer. Yeah,
crummer.
But honey, yes. I did that at some of the crummiest restaurants in Kansas City. So that's no deal. But
it impresses
but,
me.
I would say that the new chef there, Michael Corvino, is a younger chef, I think, of a slightly different generation than his predecessors, and I think he has brought a real breath of fresh air to the restaurant. He's been there for just a little over a year, and I think he has really made he has already made the restaurant much more casual. I think, you know, that, like as we had talked about, that older style of fine dining is fading out, and I think people don't want to feel restricted. They don't want to feel I think a lot of people are intimidated by fine dining.
But wouldn't you say on the flip side of that argument is that restaurants, including the American, don't want to be so casual that it doesn't become a very special event to go there. It has
Absolutely.
To have a certain amount of theatricality.
Yes.
You have to feel very special. You can't be just going to any restaurant.
Right, right, absolutely. And so, but Michael is trying to make, I think, that the restaurant a little more approachable and not as taking out the intimidation factor, but still keeping the elegance of what you would consider a special occasion restaurant, as Charles points out.
I think Lou Jane wants to jump in.
Well, I just was there this week, and I went to meet someone for a drink. Now, that has been unheard of at the American. You simply just didn't go there, although Willie was the best bartender in town. You just didn't think about it. You didn't think
just
of going
by
there
for a drink.
Exactly, exactly.
But they also, and they've started doing a special lunch menu. I think it's maybe just on Fridays or something. Maybe I'm remembering this wrong.
Well, we should throw in that Michael Corvino has created, I think, maybe the first bar menu for the American. It has its own bar menu now.
Yes, it's a place now that you feel is a little more accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
now, it's gorgeous because Crown Center's all lit
now
up.
Now, we should say that, you know, accessible is one thing, but I don't think that maybe anyone would be walking into the bar at the American in flip-flops and shorts.
Right.
I'd be horrified.
And you're right, Gina, they do serve lunch. I believe it's every first Friday of the month they serve lunch.
So that would be kind of also an evolution, that there would be the sort of like accessible, affordable day. You know what I mean?
I recall, under Selena Teo,
I recall they served lunch every weekday at least. And it was a quick three-course prefix for something ridiculous like $24. So they did do that for a while, but then they decided to take that away and focus more on dinner. And I think Michael's realizing that, you know, why not do lunch and make it a little bit, you know, we can make it a special lunch, but lunch is a little more, you know, approachable.
I want to say that the the American restaurant's bar menu is not expensive, but I would say that the dinner menu is extremely expensive.
Yeah.
Well, and also under Michael Corvino, I think it's the first time that the restaurant has moved to having a tasting menu only sort of approach to dining. I believe you still can order things a la carte, but it's not presented. But when they give you the menu, I think it's just tasting menus. So,
all right. So I think we've pretty thoroughly discussed the American restaurant. I want to get to one more on this initial list before we turn to our callers. How about Blue Stem? Charles, will you kick us off with that one?
Well, Colby Geralt, another James Beard award-winning chef, And his wife, Megan, own it together. She is the pastry chef and co-owner. And, you know, it's never been what I would call a stuffy restaurant. It has a certain amount of theatricality to it, which I like. It doesn't have tablecloths, I don't think, right now. And it has a beautiful wine list. It has a great bar and a great bar menu. Very affordable. And I think what they do more than anything is they make their guests, their patrons, feel very, very special. And I think that is
also... How do they do that?
A lot of attention, a lot of dignity, a lot of warmth. It's a very warm restaurant for a fancy restaurant.
Lou Jane, what do you think of Blue Stem?
I agree. And one of the things that I think has helped them build that feeling is their bar. It's a big room. They have, as you said, a bar menu. They've got great bartenders. And that has made people become comfortable with it maybe before they stepped into the dining room. So it's been a good what did we used to call those? Gateway drugs. It's been good in that sense.
So it's a good stepping stone toward a lifetime of fine dining, perhaps
exactly.
An addiction to it. Bonjuing, you have a relationship with Blue Stem that we should disclose. But so disclose that and then tell us about your perception of the restaurant and how it fits into fine dining.
Sure. Well, I've not only, you know, been friends with Colby and Megan for quite a while, but I also wrote and photographed their first cookbook and I photographed their second one, just coming out in the spring. So I have sort of an insider's look at Blue Stem as well. And I think both what Charles and Lou Jane said are completely correct and right spot on. You know, the lounge is very comfortable. It's sort of like, as Lou Jane pointed out, a gateway drug to possibly exploring what they have in their dining room, which is what you would consider more of the fine dining side of the restaurant. But as Charles pointed out, Blue Stem has never been sort of fine dining in the traditional sense. I think Colby and Megan really represent this new guard of this younger generation of fine dining restaurants, where the fine dining aspect of it is really in the quality of the cooking and the quality of the ingredients and also the quality of the service, which we talked about earlier, which is, you know, very detail oriented. And, you know, now after the renovation, they just renovated their restaurant earlier this year. There are no more tablecloths there used to be. And Blue Stem really is more, it's more of like a warm, cozy place. It's more of it's like eating in a living room, or used to be, especially before the renovation, like eating in a friend's living room.
But a very nice living room.
A very nice living room with white tablecloths, but now they've stripped that down and it looks more like the modern fine dining restaurant, where the attention and the resources are now more devoted to just ensuring that your food is really well cooked with really nice ingredients, and also the service is really attentive.
Let's get some caller questions in here. We've got a question from Kathy in Blue Springs. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I would like some recommendations on a good place to go for crab and lobster.
And you want a fine dining atmosphere while enjoying your crab and lobster?
Not necessarily. It's more about just some really good seafood.
Okay. Since this is a fine dining conversation, let's go ahead and focus our answers that way. Lou Jane, do you have a recommendation?
You know, I think a lot of places would be able to have a feature that would be delicious, some fish feature. But I can't think of a place in our area that we're talking about that you could just always know there'd be crab legs. But now, Capitol Grill has two things that you might consider, and that is lobster mac and cheese that's killer, and they have a stuffed lobster and lobsters, Maine lobsters all the time.
And Capitol Grill, that's on the plaza, right?
That's right.
And Capitol Grill definitely, I think, would fall into the category of fine dining. I'm going to suggest something that's not quite fine dining, but maybe on the border, which is the new Newport Grill restaurant. It's a PB&J restaurant at the Prairie Fire Complex at 135th and Knoll. Only in the sense that there's a sense, it's not fine dining, but there's a sense of dignity and a little bit of theater going on there.
What kind of theater? Flesh that out for
okay.
me.
Okay, so it's a pretty restaurant. It's a nice restaurant. It has very, very good service. In fact, they have maybe the best restaurant manager in Kansas City, Joe Wilcox, kind of heading the team there. But I want to suggest to the caller, they have a dish that you rarely see on menus anymore, which is a lobster souffle. And I'm telling you, it's beautiful and it's delicious and it's expensive, but it's worth it.
Bonjwing, any lobster and crab recommendations from a fine dining standpoint?
I'm going to have to say that I don't, other than just saying repeating what Lou Jane said, which is, you know, a lot of the fine dining restaurants, you probably will find lobster and crab on their menu, maybe not all the time, but you will find them there. But as far as a place that, you know, especially for seafood, I think that's rare in Kansas City, that there's really no restaurant there that here, or especially locally owned or independently owned restaurant that focuses on seafood. So,
well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the trend in high-end food really has gone toward local. Also, I mean, and so lobster and crab would be a bit far afield.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be, you know, if there are any chefs or young chefs out there looking to open a new concept, you know, that is sort of a hole that could be filled in Kansas City, you know, something like even just a nothing fancy, but like a crab shack or, you know, somewhere that just does, you know, crab and clam belly.
I will say this, that when I usually go to Red Lobster, I always bring my tablecloth and candlesticks with me.
Good idea.
It just adds something.
Now, before we abandon lobster altogether, that was an item on the menu at the Savoy, and we've talked about it a little bit, but the Savoy's fire recently, and now it's sailed to 21C, a nice hotel conglomerate.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with that historic dining room. I'm sure that they can't change it, the interior, because it is on the National Register, I believe. But, you know, that was one of the best dishes on the two best dishes I always thought on the Savoy menu were the lobster Newburgh, which nobody does anymore, and the actual lobster, which was in a kind of a terrifying aquarium thing. And the lobster there was the best, I thought.
Well, they did turn their lobster, so, which is very important. As you said, we are in the Midwest, and it's a delicacy that comes from the coast.
And Charles, go on.
Well, I was just going to say about the Savoy. I have to say that I hope they don't change the interior of that restaurant.
I don't think they can.
And if they even they could, because, I, you know, as – maybe some people would view me as part of the younger generation, and I do like the more casual approach to fine dining. However, I sort of, just for old timey's sake, I really love that sort of that older generation of fine dining. I think there's a sort of dignity and refinement that you don't find anymore. And I think, you know, whoever the new owners of the Savoy are, I think they really have a potential gem on their hands if they can really, you know, just clean it up and make it, you know, a little more approachable, but still keep that, you know, that old world touch to it.
Are we not finding it anymore, though? Because if we're not finding it anymore, is that partly that a younger generation is not a market for it? And therefore, like, maybe we like that it's there, but if people don't go to places like that and aren't willing when they have that special occasion to go and spend that amount of money there, can it work? What's the market for that classic kind of fine dining in Kansas City?
I think it's seen as stuffy, sadly, and it doesn't have to be, which is what makes me really sad. You know, you go to some of the best restaurants in Europe, and there's still this old world class to it. You know, there's still, you know, servers with tuxes on, you know, not in a frumpy way, but it just very elegantly, nicely dressed servers. And you have, you know, you have things like the duck press, which sort of has come back as sort of more of a spectacle. But I think part of my problem—
What is the duck press?
Well, it's this old French contraption. It's beautiful. It looks like a bell, and you put this—you put a duck in it, a duck carcass in it, and you press it. It has a little turn press on the top, and it smashes the duck bones and the carcass, and then the juices and the blood comes out, and then they make a sauce with it, and then they sauce your— it's a very old world technique of getting everything out of the duck you can. But I think I'm very cynical about the food media now, but I think there's a real focus now and more on spectacle and over substance, in my opinion. But so I think there's a for me, it's a problem, because I think a lot of these old world techniques or old world standards of service and have kind of been poo-pooed because they find it, you know, stuffy or old or whatever, and dismissing it almost entirely instead of thinking about really why those things, why, you know, hospitality was that way, instead of just dismissing it. I do like the more casual, more friendly and more approachable fine dining restaurant, but I think there are a lot of things that we can learn from, you know, past generations and how they— what hospitality was to them.
But Lou Jane, what about the market for it in Kansas City?
Well, I mean, if you think that Kansas City is 450,000 people and a million in the whole area, I think that you probably would find that we have just about as many top-tier fine dining restaurants as the market can hold. But on the next tier, I think we can have a lot more.
Right.
And one of the things that I was thinking about when the guys were talking is there are some places now that have that old world. They're in an old building. They've made it, you know, authentic. But they're the next level down, like Voltaire, for instance,
or
in
Webster
the West Bottoms.
House. Yeah. Webster House.
Interesting.
Yeah, or the Rieger.
I got to tell you, though, piggybacking on what Bonjouing said, there's nothing worse than being waited on by a waiter in a frumpy tuxedo. It just ruins everything, you know?
I think note to waiters.
Yeah.
And he can say that because he's been sent home because his— is
why your frumpy tuxedo starched
enough. No, actually, it was your friend Mary who sent me home many nights because my apron hadn't been starched well enough
at Cafe Allegro.
But yeah, I want to say that it's funny because fine dining is sort of this amorphous term anymore. It's not, you know, there's no black or white to it. I mean, some people might not say that Justice Drugstore or novel or story are fine dining, but really, I think in the true essence of that word, they are.
Well, you know, and we've got some other recommendations, and I want to run these past you. Mary from Olathe called to share that she goes to JJ's and is so thankful that it's open again. She considers that fine dining, and that Jason tweets us to say, my fine dining usually happens at Le Fou Frog. Delicious. So can we talk about JJ's and Le Fou Frog?
And I think they're perfect examples of that next level of dining in which there's a much more casual approach. The service is much more casual, and yet it's a great food experience.
Oh, especially if you consider that JJ's has one of the, you know, premier wine lists in Kansas City.
Absolutely.
But and very, very good food. But I would say that even the owner, Jimmy Francais, wouldn't call it a fine dining restaurant because it's always been a casual kind of hangout of a place.
Bonjouing, what do you think about these two suggestions?
Well, I think that's right. I think also part of what is fine dining is sometimes you go for one experience more than other experiences. So, for example, you may go to JJ's primarily because they have a great wine list. The food is also good, as Charles points out, but that's not why maybe most people go there. They know that they have a fantastic wine list. Or Le Fou Frog, for example, it's sort of the conviviality of dining in there, and they're sort of very friendly, very familiar type of service. It's a sort of a place where you find regulars because you have people who love going there over and over again because they get to know the staff and whatever. So I think fine dining at that level can be about other things. For example, I would say one of my favorite places, if you're going to talk about food quality, is I love going to Happy Gillis.
Okay, let's jump back into that in a moment. Food critics, stick with me through one more break. Central Standard will return to this lively conversation about fine dining in just a minute. Welcome back to Central Standard. You still have a little time to call in and talk to our food critics about fine dining in this day and age. What makes the price tag worth it for you? Call 816-235-2888. I'm here with Charles Ferruza, Lou Jane Temple, and Bonjuing Lee, who joins us from Napa. And I guess we were just talking about some very specific restaurants in Kansas City, where they fit in on the spectrum of fine dining. And one of the restaurants that's come up that we haven't really thoroughly discussed yet is Justice Drugstore. Lou Jane, have you been to Justice Drugstore?
I have. And I'm not a good person to ask because the whole thing is too tedious for me.
Explain that.
First of all, it's hard for people that live in the metropolitan Kansas City area to drive to Smithville. And then when you're there, we want to have a glass of wine, but you have to get home. Unless you get a driver, it's kind of you can't get the whole experience properly. They are very local oriented. Their food is very well sourced. If it were a little closer, I'd go all the time.
Charles?
Well, I think it's a very imaginative menu. I think Jonathan Justice is an extremely talented chef. I don't drink, so that's the driving out is not so much an issue for me. I do feel that the dinners, you're there for the experience, and that experience could be 2 or 3 hours. And if you've got that time to invest and all of that, I think there's a lot of pizzazz to that restaurant. It's not flashy. It's not, it's not the American. It's not a piece of theater, but it's a very interesting restaurant.
Describe the dining room.
Well,
an old drugstore?
Yeah, well, I wish it literally did look like an old drugstore. The dining room I always found to be kind of unmemorable. I don't know. I can't say anything about it. I just found the experience to be pretty interesting. And let's just say I, for as much as I like Jonathan and Justice Drugstore, there is not that sense of conviviality that Bonjuing described Le Fou Frog having. It's you're there. It's almost like you're on a mission to go there and eat good food.
So the food is really
the star.
What elevates this to possibly fine dining.
Yes.
Though that
yes.
sounds like we're not sure. Whether
no,
fine dining is.
I would put it on the
oh,
fine
yeah.
dining.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely
okay.
on the fine dining spectrum.
Bonjuing?
Well, as Charles pointed out, I think that's right about the mission of the restaurant. I think you're there to really sort of receive a message from the chef, and that message is, we're focusing on everything that comes within 100 miles of this restaurant. There is no seafood on the menu because there's no sea within 100 miles of the restaurant. So you get sort of a I don't want to use the word preachy because that's not what it is. It's more of a message. He has a specific voice, a specific agenda. And when you're there, that's sort of the main focus of the experience is getting that message of using local ingredients.
Lou Jane, you have experience running a restaurant. So I wonder if you can talk about fine dining from the restaurant owner's perspective. What are the things that the people who run these establishments might think about that we on the outside don't necessarily consider?
Well, there is a decision that you make at some point in your restaurant career. Mine, of course, was 1989 into the early 90s. And so I put butcher paper on the tables and I wanted to have markers, not crayons, because they drew better. And it gave all you had to do is sit down to get a certain idea about what was going to happen to you. And mm-hmm. I think that that's what we've talked about. All these people, they're very singular in the way that they have presented their food. Justice Drugstore is totally different than the American. A place that we haven't talked about that would be in the second tier but has a beautiful room is Lydia's. So everybody kind of chooses. JJ's has this fabulous wine list. Everybody kind of chooses what it is that they're going to concentrate on. And mine was kind of an arty, creative atmosphere.
Fun. You had a big fun quotient.
Yeah. Yes, we had lots of fun. And that's I think it's missing in a lot of restaurants.
Yeah.
Can fun be part of the fine dining equation? Should
historically,
it be?
It's not. Historically, right. It's not. But because there's a formality that they've always, you know, sought in fine dining restaurants. And, you know, fun doesn't quite fit into that definition.
Well, let's talk to John in Midtown. Hi, John.
Hi. Good morning. I'm really enjoying the conversation. I was a waiter in town for 35, maybe 40 years. And I've seen the whole arc of the dining experience change. My feeling about fine dining now is the specific thing that people look for is the flavor quotient. And without being too arty about that.
So that's what people look for. What would you, if you were to give, you know, in 2014, your personal definition of what qualifies as fine dining, not just a good meal that you'll enjoy, but like this is a fine experience. What would your definition be?
It goes back to the Italian notion of cucina povera, the simplest food, the freshest food, simply prepared. It's the umami quotient. The flavor quotient is the primary goal now when one goes out to eat. You want to have that immediate tactile experience of something sublime in your mouth.
Something sublime in your mouth. Thank you, John in Midtown. So according to John's definition, Bonjuing, what would be the finest restaurant in Kansas City?
Oh, wow. Well, right before the break, I was about to venture into talking about Happy Gillis and also Todd Schulte's restaurant, Genesee Royal, which is in the West Bottoms, and Happy Gillis is in Columbus Park area. But they're very, very humble little cafes. They're breakfast, lunch. I would call them luncheonettes or breakfast lunch places. But the food, I think Josh Ian's at Happy Gillis, just they do great stuff. And the food is simple. It's very well cooked. The ingredients are good. It's sort of what John was saying about the cucina povera. It's sort of just very nicely done, great ingredients, but it's something that any common person could make at home, but they do it particularly well.
And an atmosphere, it would be sort of the anti-fine dining.
Absolutely.
Experience.
You know, yeah, there's this mismatched quality to the interior of Happy Gillis. It looks sort of accidental. It looks like some, you know, you took a bunch of grandma, it went and collected a bunch of plates from a different grandma's and put them on the wall. And, you know, and the tables and the chairs are all mismatched. But at the very heart of it is just this real dedication to producing something, which John said was just the delicious factor. It's delicious. It's very well done. It's delicious. The quality of the cooking, the integrity of what is going on there is very high. And in that sense, I would put, you know, Happy Gillis, perhaps by that definition, in that category of fine dining. But there's another restaurant I want to just sneak in here, which I would put in the fine dining category in a more traditional sense that no one's mentioned yet, which is Michael Smith. You know, it's one of the few restaurants left that has, you know, this sort of white tablecloth
and that's
kind
in the
of
crossroads.
Atmosphere to it. It's in the Crossroads, right.
Yeah. And what would you say distinguishes Michael Smith among the handful of other places that we've identified as really fitting into this fine dining category?
Well, he has a pretty good pedigree of cooking. He started at Charlie Trotter's, came to Kansas City and won the James Beard Award along with Debbie Gold at the American Restaurant. And now he has his own restaurant, which he named Michael Smith. And he has a particular voice, though. His cooking is really more around the Mediterranean rim. It's very Mediterranean focused, Italian, some influences from further east, like the Greek and the Middle East. And Spain, a little bit on the coast of Spain. And you see that especially more exaggerated and more specifically unpacked over next door at his sort of Mediterranean tapas restaurant, Extra Virgin.
We've got Dan and Thea tweeting us, recommending Piropos. Forgive me if my pronunciation.
Piropos.
Thanks, Charles. What can you say about Piropos in the context of this conversation?
Well, it's an Argentinian restaurant. I don't know if I would consider it a fine dining restaurant, although they certainly have the delusions of that maybe, but it's a nice restaurant. It's a very comfortable restaurant, and the food, I've always had good meals there, but it's a little, it's maybe what Lou Jane would call second tier fine dining.
Yeah, I think so. One place that we haven't mentioned that is, Michael Smith made me think of, because he used to be the sous chef there, is Story in Prairie Village. And also Café Provence, even though it doesn't have any of the traditional things of fine dining, it does have very good food. And
could
they're right
across.
Could
you quickly describe both of those restaurants for listeners who may just be totally unfamiliar?
Story is more white tablecloth. The guy is just a really good cook. I love the risotto. I mean, there's good things to eat there.
They have a really good pastry chef.
Café Provence is French-oriented, like a French bistro.
Let's quickly, Michael, we don't have much time, but I'd love to hear your recommendations. Michael in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yes, I would heartily recommend Merchant's Pub and Plate, which is relatively new. The food is superb. The sauce is exquisite. It's an explosion of flavor in your mouth.
That's what
I appreciate. That's what I appreciate most about it. They buy all their products locally from farmers in the area and in season. So the menu changes with the season.
Let's get our critics responding to this. Do we think that Merchant's Plate and Pub in Leawood is fine dining?
It's in Lawrence, but it's not a fine dining restaurant. The food is very, very good. The service is pretty casual. The ambiance is pretty casual. I wouldn't even call it second tier fine dining. It's more third tier. But you know, I mean, if you're going out for good food in a convivial time, it's a great place.
Yeah, I think we went together, didn't we? And it's neat that they have marked all of the farms around Lawrence that they buy from, so you know that it's all locally sourced, which I give chefs a lot of credit, because that takes a lot of work.
It does.
And before we go, Bonjwing, part of your claim to fame is that you travel internationally and capture these exquisite meals through photographs primarily. What distinguishes fine dining in other cities and in other countries from what we would see here?
Well, I think maybe my definition of fine dining is perhaps broader in some senses, because I see a wider range of fine dining, but it's also admittedly probably narrower, because I also tend to photograph and travel and work with exclusively the very, very high end of fine dining. So I have an admittedly skewed view or skewed definition of fine dining, just because I'm primarily focusing on the finest dining in the world. And when I say finest, I mean the Michelin-starred restaurants of Europe and in the United States. But I think that fine dining around the world now universally is changing. And it is a cultural difference. You know, what we would consider Café Provence, we would consider a nicer restaurant in Kansas City. In France, it would be a neighborhood bistro that would not particularly be of any... But I think culturally, because it's been transposed to a different culture, it has sort of that novelty of being foreign, and there's novelty to that. But, you know, if you go to Japan, Japan is really a great example of where fine dining has a totally different definition. Fine dining is about the quality of food and about the craft.
You could sit
at a sushi bar.
That's all the time we have for today's show. I'm so sad. I want to talk about this for so much longer. The list of restaurants compiled for this discussion about fine dining will be online at kcur.org later today. Lou Jane Temple, I've really enjoyed having you in the studio this morning. Stay in touch with us. I think so, too. Bonjwing Lee, thanks for being here. Happy travels.
Thank you. Thank you.
Charles Ferruza, as always, it's been a pleasure, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, Gina.
Monday, Central Standard returns with Money Therapy, just in time for the holidays when everything's a little crazier. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with lots of help from Patrick Quick and Matt Hodep. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend, everyone.